two-pass stack.
Level. I don't know the rules anymore or something's changed, but I can't believe it.
It's a 4-0 goal. Big cheer. Are you kidding me? What is that?
It's NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve Hockey Crew on your home of the Winnipeg Jets and all things NHL. TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Who hates bye weeks? Do you hate bye weeks, Shaunosaur?
I could do it for like a bye 3 days.
Yeah, sort of like a bye long weekend.
There we go.
Okay, you can live with a bye long weekend. How about you, Ez? How do you feel about bye weeks?
Well, I don't like them, especially in the middle of the season.
Because it's just sort of like all of a sudden things are, you know, you're into a routine.
Yeah.
You know, every 2 days, maybe there's, you know, 2 days off, and then you play on a Tuesday, and instead of playing on a Thursday, you play on a Friday. You know, things happen like that. And then all of a sudden, boom, you have this week where nothing's going on.
With the exception of the Christmas break, Drew, or the holiday break, whatever you want to call it.
Which is 3 days.
Yeah, I want hockey, you know, basically 362 days a year.
Well, you know, here's the problem, and I should say, good evening, Winnipeg, good evening, Manitoba, and for all those joining us live at TSN1290.ca, Drew Mandel, Shaunosaur, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio on this Wednesday evening. Here's the problem I have. I mean, you got the break over Christmas, which is about, what, 3 days, maybe 4 days from about usually teams play on the December 23rd, and then they don't play again until the 27th. Okay, fine. Can live with that. So you got, you know, those 4 days off there. Then you come back for 2 weeks, and now the Jets are off for the week in the bye week. Then they're back next week, and then they're off for another, you know, 4 or 5 days. It's just such a quirky, stupid schedule that you just can't get into any flow of things. I don't like it. I mean, I know selfishly I don't like it because I'm sitting here trying to plan a radio show. And, you know, you're trying to plan a radio show that focuses on the Winnipeg Jets. And there's nothing going on with the Winnipeg Jets this week because of this bye week. And to think that the only reason the bye week exists is so that the NHL can play an all-star game at 3-on-3. Because remember, there was never any bye week before that. It just came about because that was the concession that the NHLPA got the NHL when the NHL said we'd like to do our all-star games as 3-on-3. I mean, who cares about the all-star game? You can end the season a week earlier or 10 days earlier if you get rid of these bye weeks. Get rid of the all-star game while you're at it, and boom, Bob's your uncle.
Luckily, this show is called NHL This Week, not Jets This Week. So, and luckily, the bye week is almost over.
I'm very glad that it's almost over, but might as well get into it. Talking about the Jets, even though there isn't a ton going on, as we said, they are on their bye week. They got 36 games to go when they return on Saturday afternoon in Calgary. A game, of course, you can hear live on TSN 1290. As they currently stand, they are still atop the NHL's Central Division. Nashville Predators hot on their heels with games in hand. Last night, Nashville victorious at home against the Vegas Golden Knights. A 1-0 victory for the Predators at home over the Golden Knights. The Blues, they were victorious last night as well. They won in Toronto. I believe that was a 2-1 final for the Blues. So they are, you know, holding court in third spot in the NHL Central Division. The Jets with games in hand on the Blues. But right now, as we sit here on the 17th of January, a beautiful 17th of January, I might say, as it is outside, the Jets have 36 games to go. They are estimated, projected to end up at 102 points in the Central Division. They currently have a 91% chance to make the playoffs. Clearly, things have gone well for the Winnipeg Jets in their first 46 games of the season. I'm not breaking any news with that. As you sit here today, with 36 games to go, how have your expectations for the Jets changed? And what is now a successful season and a successful playoff run for the Winnipeg Jets? Clearly, at the start of the year, making the playoffs was the goal. Winning a couple games, maybe winning a round would be a successful season. Now, how have your expectations changed?
Well, if you're talking about, you know, your expectations from the beginning of the season until now.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
Obviously, you know, they've changed big time. If you're talking about your expectations from now, from a month ago, obviously they haven't changed much because the Jets have been rolling along pretty nicely here.
I'm talking about since the start of training camp.
Except those last couple of games before the break in which the Jets didn't get any points there in regulation. But now the Jets are competing for the Central Division. So now you're not just happy to get into the playoffs. You want to go on a long playoff run. And as far as I'm concerned, guys, winning the division is not very important. I mean, if you get into the playoffs, that's what matters most, and most NHL teams will tell you that, that winning the division isn't going to be the most important thing that you do in a year. And so expectations for me have changed big time since the beginning of the season because, look, I picked the Jets to make the playoffs at the beginning of the year, and I wasn't the only one, but they've shown us this year, especially with their home record, that they can really beat anybody in either the Western Conference or the Eastern Conference. And you know, for me, going into the break, it was disappointing losing those two games back-to-back on the road against Chicago and Minnesota. And now you had that buffer zone, and now you don't have that. You mentioned that Nashville won last night. Nashville won without their top line. And UC Soros became the first Predators goalie in history to have two shutouts that each featured 40-plus saves. And so when you're talking about Nashville, you're talking about St. Louis, Dallas has quietly crept up on the Winnipeg Jets. They're in that wild card spot right now. I believe they're 5 points behind the Jets, 5 or 6 points. I don't have the standings in front of me. So for me, I mean, the expectations are now a lot higher. And I mean, anybody in that Jets room, especially Blake Wheeler, is going to tell you that, you know, this team has aspirations to go far in the Stanley Cup Finals, not just make the playoffs. So, you know, a very impressive first half of the season, a very impressive record with Mark Scheifele out of the lineup. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you got to start off here with a win against the Flames. The Flames are playing really well as of late.
Yeah, their bye week came at a terrible time for them. They'd won 7 games in a row, and boom, all their momentum is immediately, well, you know, theoretically is immediately killed because they have to go take a 5-day bye week. You know there's no way the Flames wanted to stop playing hockey after, you know, having won 7 games in a row.
Yeah, so, you know, what are your expectations? Well, it depends how optimistic you are, Drew. Do you think this team is a bona fide Stanley Cup contender? Do you think this team can win one round? Do you think they can win 2 rounds, 3 rounds? I mean, I think this team can beat anybody. Are there teams in the Western Conference that they match up better against? Sure. I think the Jets don't match up very well against the Nashville Predators, for example. I think they match up pretty darn good against the Chicago Blackhawks or the St. Louis Blues. So, I mean, for me, you know, they've shown that they can win at a consistent level this year, and that's something they haven't done much in the last 6-plus years.
The Dallas Stars, you mentioned them, Ezzy. They're 7-3 in their last 10 games, 4 points behind the Winnipeg Jets. Each team has played 46 games. So the Dallas Stars, a team that a lot of people had as a improved hockey team after the moves they made in the offseason, beginning to find their stride and are now right in the thick of things, both in the Western Conference playoff race and even in the Central Division playoff race, only 2 points behind the Blues without 1 game in hand. Sean, Frank Saravelli's been covering the trade deadline for TSN.ca, came out with sort of his wish list for Western Conference teams and Eastern Conference teams. Of the, you know, he obviously touched on the Jets in the course of that wish list. He said that Kevin Cheveldayoff is wishing and working the phones for a top three centerman, a top nine centerman, maybe somebody to fill that role behind Mark Scheifele when he's healthy, of course, and Brian Little, and maybe somebody that would fit in there, moving Adam Lowry to maybe a fourth line centerman role. Is that what the Jets should be targeting as we approach the trade deadline towards the end of February, about 6 weeks away from that, or is there another area you think that the Jets would be focusing on?
Well, it's really interesting because it really falls onto the thought process of whether or not the Jets are going to keep Mark Scheifele and Blake Wheeler together. Because I believe that if Blake Wheeler remains down the middle, which I don't foresee happening, but then possibly...
You're saying when Scheifele is healthy.
When Scheifele is healthy. But then possibly if that option is available, you know, the natural progression still follows through and everyone gets bumped down because Wheeler would become either 1A, 1B, and then Little becomes 3. So could you maybe look at an impact winger now that you have this depth of centermen, which may be a little bit I don't want to say easier.
Well,
to
it is. If you look at the TSN trade bait board, the centermen who are on the, you know, the top 25 trade bait trade list from TSN, the centermen aren't anybody that excites you. I mean, Andrew Shaw. Well, nobody's taking that contract from the Montreal Canadiens. No. It's a terrible contract. J.G. Peugeot from the Ottawa Senators. It's a guy who's, you know, maxed out, I think, at 15 goals in the course of his career.
Is that an impact center? Like,
not really. Not for what the Winnipeg Jets would need. And then the third centerman is Mark Letestu from the Edmonton Oilers, Ezzy. But if you look at the impact wingers, and this is a guy who I've mentioned his name on Saturday's show and we talked about a little bit, a guy like Mike Hoffman, well, that's a much more impactful winger than, I would say, the centermen who are currently available on the trade bait board. The performance of Blake Wheeler up the middle, granted, small sample size, mm-hmm. has, I think, provided the Jets with a little bit more flexibility. I don't know that they necessarily want to start considering him as a centerman, mm-hmm. but it's obviously a thought that could pop into their heads.
When Scheifele comes back, Wheeler's going back to right wing.
I think that happens. I do think that happens also.
There's no doubt in my mind. And, Sean, as far as I'm concerned, I mean, the Jets are the strongest they've ever been mm-hmm. up the middle, mm-hmm. and I don't see them going after centerman. That's my own personal belief. When you've got Adam Lowry as your third line center, we know that he's done a great job on that third line, whether it's with Brandon Tanev or whoever is on that line.
Mm-hmm.
Andrew Kopp has also been on that line. That was the line for the majority of the season before they had some injuries. So for me, when Scheifele comes back, you go back to Scheifele, Little, Lowry, Hendricks up the middle.
Sure, because if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Absolutely. And, you know, I'm not saying that, you know, we argued about this on the Saturday show, maybe not argued, but discussed the possibility. Yes. Hey, the Jets could go after a guy like Mike Hoffman. If I'm Chevy, you know, I'm definitely entertaining that possibility. But I don't know if the Jets need a guy like Mike Hoffman because they're already mm-hmm. a top two, top three. By the end of the year, they might be the top offensive team in the league. And we know that Hoffman, I mean, that's what he does. He scores goals, right? So, I mean, your counter-argument, Drew, could be, well, you can never have enough guys that can put the puck in the net. But for me, you're adding depth players, if anything, at the trade deadline. So you're adding, you know, a third-pairing defenseman. You're adding a specialty winger for the third or fourth line. For me, you're not adding a top six piece. But, you know, again, that's just my opinion. And that's because right now, you know, the way the Jets are playing first in the Central, you know, Nashville might be hot on their heels. But for me, the Jets don't have to make any big moves when you've got Scheife coming back in 3 or 4 weeks.
Look, when it comes to the trade deadline, cautionary tales abound. Because everybody thought, you know, who was the big winner of who won the big prize in terms of the rental market at the trade deadline last year? Well, it was the Minnesota Wild, you would say, when they acquired Martin Hanzel. And they gave up a significant price for Martin Hanzel. He was the best centerman, the preeminent centerman available at the trade deadline.
But hold on a second, Drew. You know, are you a winner at the trade deadline if you don't go anywhere in the playoffs?
No, you're not.
That's a good point.
Right? So is Washington a winner because they got Shattenkirk?
Absolutely not, because what happened in both of those situations with Minnesota with Hanzel and Washington with Shattenkirk, well, Minnesota, you know, they won the trade deadline when the deadline happened.
Right.
But come April, when the games really matter, what happened? The Wild lasted 5 games against the St. Louis Blues. The Capitals lasted into the second round. You know, so the price they paid, while on, you know, February 28th or whatever day it was last year for the trade deadline, seemed like a reasonable price because maybe this is the piece that puts you over the top and you become the preeminent Stanley Cup favorite. Well, lo and behold, in the second week of April, you know, your season's over and you're regretting paying that price.
Yeah, and I know what you're saying. I mean, whoever gets Evander Kane is going to be deemed the winner of the trade deadline, most likely after the trade deadline. But for me, you know, it really matters where that team goes in the playoffs, Sean, and what they have to give up, right? So if you have to give up, they're talking on insider trading about giving up a prospect, a roster player, possibly 2 draft picks for Evander Kane. Well, if you end up not signing Evander Kane and that's what you have to give up, I think that's too much.
We'll talk about that when we get to the insider trading segment later on, but there's no chance, given Evander Kane's, I would describe as one-dimensional nature, and maybe some of his attitude issues, that anybody's paying that price to get him out of the Buffalo Sabres. No chance. We'll talk about that later on in the show. When we come back, though, Andrew Cogliano had his Ironman streak ended this week, not because of injury, but because of suspension. We'll talk about that next. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290.
Yeah, you know, I've had some time to digest about it and think about it. You know, first and foremost, I think I probably initiated contact too late. I've been very open about that with this process, and I made a mistake at that time. As I think about the hit, though, I watch it, and I still see that my body doesn't change through the process of it. I think I've my shoulder's low, my elbow's low, my knees are bent, and that's what I see. You know, I think there was no injury. He came back and played, but I think at the end of the day, from what I've seen, I think it was a situation where we kind of closed the gap on each other a little bit.
That's Ducks forward Andrew Cogliano speaking after he had been suspended for 2 games by the NHL Department of Player Safety for his hit on Adrian Kempe. Cogliano, by the way, I encourage you to watch that entire video. Very well spoken. Mm-hmm. I was very impressed for a player who we're so used to just getting robotic answers. He was very well spoken, very articulate. So, you know, I was impressed with Andrew Cogliano in the course of that interview.
He was obviously choked up.
Oh, yeah. You can hear the emotion in his voice. As we said, 830 consecutive games played in the NHL. Fourth longest Ironman streak in NHL history. Doug Jarvis holds the record of 964, of course.
Yeah, but Drew, this is what people don't realize. Not only has he played 830 games in a row, he hasn't missed a game in his career.
Yeah.
That's since the start of his career.
It's an incredible streak. I mean, that is, you know, to get to where he is, that's 10 years. That's 10 years worth of games. And you know, to have it end on such a... controversial decision, I guess, by the NHL Department of Player Safety. Let me ask you guys this. The hit, I mean, he took responsibility for it in the course of that clip you just heard.
Yep.
He didn't feel as though it was particularly malicious. Adrian Kempe was injured, bloodied a little bit on the play. As to who's responsible for it, I guess you could depends on if you wear Kings colored glasses or Ducks colored glasses. But in your mind, Ezzy,
yep.
2 games, right, wrong, given his lack of any interaction with the Department of Player Safety in the course of his career, could they have given him a pass? You know, how do you think that they handled the Cogliano situation? And should they have taken the Ironman streak into consideration when they doled out the punishment?
No, you can't take that into consideration, Drew. You have to judge the act on the ice. And Adrian Kempe sees him at the last second. I've watched the replay. I've watched the video now mm-hmm. probably 20 times.
Yeah, you slow it down. You frame by frame it. You're trying to
It's a hit to the head. It is a hit to the head.
It's a bit late also.
And it's a late hit. And you know, 2 games is probably, you know, fair for the hit. Cogliano, as you know, Drew, has no history of previous suspensions or fine. Andrew Cogliano is not a physical player. Mm. I mean, he's a guy that can be physical, but
it's
not
his game.
He's not what you would consider a power forward. Cogliano is one of the fastest forwards in the league. And, you know, this is a guy that also has tons of playoff experience. He was a key part of that Ducks team that went to the Western Conference Final last year. And, mm-hmm. you know, he's been, you know, a staple of this Ducks team for quite some time now. And you saw Teemu Selänne and Francois Beauchemin come out and support Cogliano. But the reality is, guys, you know, when you compare this to other suspensions, I mean, it's late, as Sean mentioned. It's a hit to the head. And, you know, in this day and age, when you're trying to take those types of hits out, you have to suspend it. Now, again, as I mentioned, I've always been a big fan of Cogliano's game. I love the way he plays the game, and it sucks big time that his Ironman streak ended, and it also sucked that Jay Bouwmeester's Ironman streak ended. He was second behind Cogliano.
I believe, didn't that end in Winnipeg?
I believe it did.
I think
you're right.
After he played in Ottawa, and then he couldn't come back and play. It was almost a back-to-back situation. This is a couple of years ago now, right? He played in Ottawa, and then they came here on a Saturday afternoon, I think, and he couldn't suit up because of an injury. Anyways, we're getting off topic, but I think it ended here.
Well, yeah, and the fact that, Sean, you have players in this day and age that can play 700, 800 consecutive games is remarkable. It shows you what kind of condition these guys are in. Mm-hmm. But even though you hate to see the streak end, it was a hit to the head, and in the modern day NHL, they're suspending that type of play.
Yeah, it's the new NHL where the campaign is anti-headshot, protect the defenseless player, and whether or not Kempe saw Cogliano coming or not, it was a bit of a late hit. Was he watching a pass? Maybe a little bit, but as the initiator of contact, you have to be aware of where you're hitting a guy, where he is on the ice, and the whether he's expecting said hit or not. And it didn't look like Kempe. Looks like he saw him last minute. And before he even realized what was about to happen, it was shoulder to face. He did continue the game. And that to me is the kind of what kind of irks me a little bit. We've seen some pretty dirty hits across the NHL that have gone unsuspended.
Mm-hmm.
That one didn't look as malicious as some of the ones we've seen. So to end a streak on that, it's unfortunate, but it's a hit that the NHL is for sure trying to get out of the game.
You know,
and I was going to say Patrick Maroon, you know, a couple of weeks ago on Drew Doughty, I thought was much worse. Mm-hmm. That's because Drew Doughty doesn't see him at all.
Mm-hmm.
Adrian Kempe sees him here, and I truly believe that Cogliano did not intend to hit him in the head.
But I agree.
At the end of the day, it's not really, you know, what your intention is. It's the act. If you hit the guy in the head, you hit the guy in the head.
So you don't think there was, I mean, it was a very heated game between the Kings and the Ducks, two tremendous rivals.
Yep.
There were three fights within the first 3 minutes of this game. So you don't think that he was trying to maybe continue the emotion? Not saying he was deliberately trying to hit Kempe in the head, but that maybe he saw an opportunity to maybe hit him. Probably not in the head, probably not to, you know, to do significant damage to him, but the context of what was going on in the game, does that matter in this instance?
Yeah, and to Sean's point, if you watch the replay, and as we mentioned, I think we all have, you know, dozens of times now, and, you know, I think Cogliano's surprised at how Kempe reacts to the hit and where he hits him. I think he, as you mentioned, Drew, I think he was, you know, it's clear that he was trying to bump him. I mean, he followed through, as Sean mentioned. He was trying to line him up, but the problem is it just didn't work out how he wanted it to work out. And as you mentioned, I didn't watch the game, but there were fights in that game. I know that. And so it was obviously getting a little bit chippy in the game. But again, you can't do that. And, you know, for all of those people, you know, who criticize the NHL Department of Player Safety, and, you know, Drew and I have done that many times over the years on this show or on the Saturday show,
mm-hmm.
I think they got it right here.
You got him right. George Parros, of course, is in charge of the Department of Player Safety, and he was a longtime member of the Anaheim Ducks. Elliot Friedman, in his 31 Thoughts column, talked about it, how Parros loves the Ducks organization, and the Ducks organization loves Parros in return. Do you think that factored into his decision-making to make sure that it wasn't perceived that he was going too easy on his former team, or do you think this was just sort of cut and dry in that this is a guy, Cogliano, he, you know, on purpose or by accident, irregardless, which isn't a word, you know, laid a hit on Adrian Kempe, who was unsuspecting and it was late, and he got him in the head, and there was a sort of a clear-cut two-game suspension, and he didn't stay up late agonizing over it.
Yeah, I think when you look at all the factors, and this must have been a really hard decision for George Parros, regardless. Like it was reported, Cogliano was his roommate when they were on the road when Parros was on the Ducks, so there's some personal connections between the two of them. I'm sure they've gone to battle for one another, you know, so you have that brotherly bond. But in today's game where you're trying to eliminate shots directly to the head, it's a statement. It's a statement that those type of shots, regardless of whether or not this guy is my brother, a former soldier that I went to battle with, was like what a roommate of mine, doesn't matter. It's a shot that we're trying to get out of the game, and regardless of our preconceived relationship or a previous relationship, doesn't matter.
And Sean, it's not just George Parros' decision. And I know Drew knows that. You've got, mm-hmm. you know, Stefan Quintel there. You've got Patrick Burke. They have a whole staff there. Obviously, you know, George Parros, you know, has a major say in every one of these incidences. But, you know, it's unfortunate. But again, I mean, you can't be critical of the NHL Department of Player Safety when they're too harsh as opposed to too lenient.
Well, it's interesting. Again, Elliot Friedman addressed this in his 31 Thoughts column. He says that very rarely, almost never before, has he had this many people reaching mm-hmm. out to him mm-hmm. via text message, players, executives, etc., saying that they were bothered by the suspension, that they were bothered by the punishment that Cogliano received. Now, if Andrew Cogliano doesn't have an Iron Man streak and he's only been, you know, he's been playing for 300 straight games,
we're not even talking about this.
You know, do these people reach out? Probably not. So I think that these people might be colored by the Iron Man streak, colored by the contacts, colored by the length, obviously, that Cogliano had to play through in order to keep that streak going, to only have it fall by the wayside as a result of a a headshot, but probably not a malicious headshot.
I have a much bigger problem with the way the Giordano hit on Sebastian Aho has been received.
And we'll talk about that later on in the show, too.
As far as I'm concerned, that's a clean hit.
Well, I mean, and we'll talk about that coming up. I think it's at 6:45. We'll talk about the impact of the Mark Giordano hit on Sebastian Aho and what that means for the Carolina Hurricanes and their playoff chances, because Aho out of the Hurricanes lineup indefinitely with both a concussion and a lower body injury.
And Giordano might be suspended for that.
Well, no suspension. They've already announced no suspension.
I didn't see that.
Yes, no suspension for Giordano on that. Mm-hmm. But we'll talk about that hit
coming
up.
Well, that's the right call.
Okay. Well, we'll talk about that. Save it for 6:45. That's coming up. Colton Orr is coming up next here on the program. Want to make note before we go to break, though, that this segment was brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard. Hopefully Adrian Kempe was wearing a mouth guard. And give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial teeth and mouth protection. To make an appointment to get your teeth to ting, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. When we return, Colton Orr joins us on the program. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. Bottom of the hour, Wednesday evening. You're listening to NHL This Week on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Sean Assor, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news and Manitoba Moose news. That's IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to welcome back to the program Colton Orr. You know Colton from his lengthy NHL career. Colton, good evening and thanks very much for joining us.
Good evening, guys. How are you guys doing tonight?
Doing very well, Colton. Appreciate your time this evening.
No
want to look around the NHL with you on this Wednesday night. Previous segment, we were talking about the Andrew Cogliano suspension, which simultaneously ended his Ironman streak. It's been a big topic of conversation throughout the NHL. Colton, I assume you've seen the hit, and after viewing it, you know, what were your thoughts? Did the NHL Department of Player Safety get it right with a two-game suspension, and should they have factored in his Ironman streak into their decision-making?
Well, first off, I do believe they got it right. I think this was the right call. It was late. It was a headshot. You know, even if it wasn't a late hit, it still was a headshot. So there's a couple things to take in the factor on that hit. Another thing was the tempo of the game. It was one of those games. There was three fights in the opening period. So there was a lot going on in that game. There's a lot of motions going on. But you have to take out the Ironman streak, which is awful because it was such a long streak. And for it to end that way was really, something you don't want to see. No one was happy about it, and that's how the streak ended. I'm sure even, the player department, safety is not happy about it either, but they have to do their job. They have to just take it, as it was, and he had to take a look at the hit and not consider the fact that he played 830 consecutive games. And I'm pretty sure that, you watched him, you watched Cogliano's interview after. He was so emotional. And so that probably brings on even more of, how people are reacting to the suspension just because of how much that meant to him and probably how much he had to go through to play that streak, as from the start of his career, how amazing that is. It's definitely, it's tough to see a streak go, but they got the right call there.
Colton, the Cogliano hit was obviously not the only controversial hit of the week, with Mark Giordano of the Flames knocking Sebastian Aho out of the game and getting that match penalty. And earlier today, the NHL announced that Mark Giordano won't be suspended. I saw you on Twitter tweeting about it a little bit a couple days back. What were your thoughts on the hit, and did you have any problem with Justin Williams jumping in there to drop the gloves with Giordano?
This is what kind of bugged me with this hit is the way he was toe dragging to the middle and with no regard of thinking I might get leveled here. I went back and watched this hit over and over again. At first I was watching to see if it was a headshot. And to me, at first glance, it didn't really look like a headshot. And then someone pointed out, the knee, maybe he stuck out the knee. So then I started to go rewatch and look for, you know, did he stick out his knee? Was he, you know, was he trying to get by him? Then, you know, he thought he was going to get beat and stick out his knee. I think he came, you know, once he started cutting the middle, Ahu kind of put himself in an awkward position, trying to toe drag and get around him. And, Giordano stood his ground. He, you know, he was not going to let him, you know, just like dangle around him and, you know, have a good quality shot. So, I liked this hit. I thought he held his ground well. And, I think some of these players now think they have a free pass because, you know, that if they get a headshot or whatever, they get hurt, that it's going to be a suspension and that they don't have to worry so much about cutting to the middle. Back in our day, you don't cut to the middle. That was the big rule. Like you cut to the middle, that's your own fault for getting leveled like that. So it's something that I think that the kids need to start learning and think about a little bit more. As much as you enjoy seeing the skill and as much as these players can make moves like that, you still have to be cautious and consider cutting to the middle and keeping your head down watching the puck like that.
Colt, I want to talk to you about something else, some more roughhousing in the NHL. You were a guy who chucked a few knucks back in your career. I want to pick your brain on the Kadri-Thornton fight, and I wanted to just ask you, put yourself in Nazem Kadri's shoes. You're significantly smaller than your opponent, and there's this gigantic beard hanging down, normally where I assume you would lock up and grab a guy by the scruff or the collar. So what else was Nazem Kadri supposed to do in that situation? And have you ever seen something like that where a beard literally gets ripped off a guy's face?
When I first saw the picture about this beard, I was like, how did this happen at first? You know, because I didn't see from the original fight watching it, see the beard get grabbed and see it fall on the ice. Right away, I just saw a picture of the beard in the back of his glove there, or, you know, one of the trainers took it on the bench or something like that. And I was like, how did that happen? Like, where did this come from? And then going and seeing that fight with Kadri, first, I really liked the way Kadri responded off the opening draw like that. You know, we're going back here, but, you know, when Thornton came at him and was, you know, challenging him right off the face-off, I don't think Thornton was going to expect Kadri to say, yes, I'll fight you. And I really liked how Kadri responded. And then with the beer grab, which is so big and so bushy that I don't think he had a choice. If you grabbed the right shoulder, left shoulder, middle of the collar, wherever you grabbed, I think you're getting a piece of it. And I guess Jumbo Joe said he didn't even feel it. So maybe the beard's not that strong. I thought for sure that would have been a little stronger of a hold for him, like, you know, to get a hold of a beard. But, yeah, I don't think there's much else you could do. And Jumbo wasn't too concerned about it. No one was complaining that Kadri was going out there trying to grab his beard on purpose and be like, oh, I'm going to get the advantage of having this guy by the beard. But, yeah, that was an interesting fight for sure. There's been, it's definitely something that I don't think we'll see again. And maybe that makes him think about shaving his beard.
Colton Orr is our guest on NHL This Week. We're looking around the NHL at some of the recent goings-on. And Colton, Saturday night in Montreal, there was a scary incident where Philip Deneau took a rising slap shot from Zdeno Chara and took it right in the side of the head. You know, obviously, there's no intention there. It's a freak accident. It's something that just, you know, can happen in the course of the game. How does Philip Deneau sort of bounce back from that incident? I mean, obviously he's concussed and he'll recover from the concussion, however long that takes him. But how does he prevent, you know, it altering his mindset and altering his career, and to make sure he doesn't go from, you know, once bit, twice shy?
Well, I can tell you one thing. I've never been hit in the head by Zdeno Chara's shot, but I was always scared of his shot. He was like one of the only guys that going out to the point or seeing him wind up for a one time, then I was like, I'm just ducking or getting out of the way before he even know where it's going, because his shot is absolutely a rocket and it's hard. And that one got away. There's no intention for him. You know, he's not trying to, I don't think he's trying to get it that high. And so he was pretty concerned seeing something like that. That's a scary moment. Anytime you see anyone go down like that, whether it's a shot, whether, you know, it's a fight or a guy hits the ice or hit, when you see a guy that goes down that hard, it's scary. So for him, it's going to be kind of just getting back out there. And anytime I was injured with a concussion, it's just getting back out there, getting your confidence back. I'm pretty sure it's going to be a little bit scary when you see shots coming out from the point. But it's just making sure he feels properly and he feels right that he's going to come back and not come back too soon. Otherwise, you wouldn't want to get hurt again or be scared that possibly you could get hurt. So I think just taking his time and making sure he's healed and feeling comfortable and confident when he comes back.
Colton, yesterday at MSG, Henrik Lundqvist set an NHL record, winning his 20th game for the 13th straight season. You played with him for 4 years. Is Henrik Lundqvist being maybe taken for granted how important he still is to this Rangers team? Because his numbers have been great lately.
Well, he is their team. They've had, you know, some years they maybe haven't had the best team, but he's gotten them to the playoffs. He's taken them to long drives in the playoffs. And he's playing so well at a high level. He's 35, and he just continues to play at such a high level and so competitive. When I play with him, it's one thing I've always noticed. He's really competitive. He's really vocal in the room. If you saw the other night, he came in relief for that first game back there against the Islanders, I think it was. And he was trying to get his team motivated. He was going up and down the bench to a man to make sure, you know, let's get this, let's turn this around. And maybe they didn't get that response then, but I'm sure he's kept on the guys. And they had a great night in MSG last night, and especially when the Flyers come to town. You know that's going to be a pretty good, well-fought game, and fans will be in it. And, you know, they came out rocking. Nash scored 2 goals, which is good for the Rangers they can get him scoring. And so what they need, Lundqvist needs some support on the scoring aspect and some defense, because right now, he's kept them in games, and he continues to just be a dominant goaltender. And it's really fun to watch. And, you know, hopefully they can build around him, you know, because his career is coming to an end. And, you know, he really wants to win that Stanley Cup because that's all he's competing for right now.
Colton, I'm curious. There's a really interesting situation in the Atlantic Division right now with Tampa, Boston, and Toronto pretty much, you know, locked up their playoff positions, and then Detroit, Florida, Montreal, Ottawa, Buffalo below the line, and it doesn't look like they'll be catching them anytime soon. Is it tough to get motivated when you're one of those top teams and you know that you've kind of already locked up a playoff spot and you don't want to get hurt and you kind of want to, you know, you don't want to tire yourself out down this home stretch? Or is that just something that the media talks about and these guys are pros and they're pedal to the metal all the way to the playoffs?
Yeah, they're not really thinking too much about that. Every game they're looking at is an important game now, whether it's preparing for the playoffs, because, you know, it does look like those teams, like we talked about, like the Toronto Maple Leafs, they want to be ready for the playoffs. Mm-hmm. They want to make sure that they have their systems right. They're playing the proper way. They're playing playoff hockey. And you know, Babcock is preaching that. And so there's going to probably be some learning curves for the rest of the end of the year here. But I just believe that players are pretty professional, and they're not really looking too much now at the standings. They're going to want to get, like, home ice. Let's see how far we can push ourselves and how far we can get up in the standings instead of being, like, looking who's behind us. It's kind of that mentality of, like, let's look forward and keep pushing in front of us. And it's such an opposite in the Metro division, where it's just you could be in the playoffs wild card one night and you lose a game and a couple teams win and you're in eighth place, which is, you know, or you're 2 spots out of a wild card spot. So that's a totally different mentality where you have to be on every night. So it's quick, you know, it's the standings are fun to watch right now. It's so much exciting hockey going on with the way they are.
Yeah, Colton, you just mentioned the standings, and, you know, we've been talking about the Rangers with you. You're in New York, and, you know, the Rangers have been playing well as of late. They're in a wild card spot right now, and there's a lot of talk about, you know, the Rangers maybe moving a guy like Rick Nash, who's a pending UFA, or a Michael Grabner. Do you expect Jeff Gorton to be active prior to the deadline, or is it too early to tell with about 6 weeks to go here before teams can't trade anymore?
Well, it's pretty early to tell before last night, they were out of a playoff spot. They were, you know, so they won last night to beat Philly. They lose that to Philly last night. They're actually, you know, they're 2 spots out of a wild card spot. So it's pretty early to tell. I don't think there's too much they can add at this point with who they have. I believe Grabner, he needs to stay. He's been so good for them. His speed, it adds such an element to this team. So I don't believe they would be shopping Grabner. Nash is something to consider. Him playing well maybe can help raise the stock a little bit and get something for them that they need. What they're missing that first line center right now. You look around the league and the teams that are really good have that those two superstars up front. You got Crosby, Malkin, and Kessel. You got Matthews, Marner. You got Stamkos, Kucherov. You got all these teams, and the Rangers don't really have that. They got that balance of four lines, and I don't think that's a piece you can add. So you have to continue to just – they're going to have to continue to play that system. They are rely on Lundqvist a lot, and I think just kind of push that way. Because come the deadline, there's not going to be too many moves that they can make that's really going to push them over the edge.
Colton Orr spent 12 years in the NHL. He now joins us here on this program. Colton, appreciate your time this evening. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you, guys. Have a good evening.
Likewise, Colton. We'll do it again soon. Thanks again.
Take care.
You're listening to NHL This Week. When we come back, we talk about the Giordano hit on Sebastian Aho. We talk about the news that Corey Crawford might be out for the remainder of the year and the impact that'll have on the Hurricanes and the Blackhawks. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290.
Finds Aho, working on Hamilton. Aho chips it around. Aho cuts out front and he gets rocked with a big hit by Mark Giordano. And Aho is down. And now Williams challenges Giordano. And the gloves are off after the captain of the Flames delivered a big blow on Aho coming through the slot. And now gets the upper hand on Williams, who jumps to the defense of his teammate. There was no penalty on that play. And Aho's still down in the corner. And that was a heck of a hit by number 5 for the Calgary Flames.
There was no penalty initially. The refs got together, gave Mark Giordano a game misconduct, a match penalty for his hit on Sebastian Aho. NHL decided there's no supplemental discipline necessary on it. The hit is the hit. The penalty is the penalty. The Carolina Hurricanes are still feeling the pain as Aho, their leading scorer, is out indefinitely with both a concussion and a lower body injury. So 2 for the price of 1 on that hit by Mark Giordano on Sebastian Aho. Welcome back to NHL This Week. This segment is brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com.
Bet Frank thought that was a good hit.
Well, Ezzy, you thought that was a good hit, as you indicated earlier on.
It was a clean hit.
So tell us why it's a clean hit, and tell us why somebody else who is watching that hit might think it's a dirty hit.
Well, you know, we just talked to Colton about this last segment, and, you know, it kind of reminds you, guys, of an old-school Scott Stevens hit, right? And Sebastian Aho has his head down, and he's admiring, you know, what he's doing on the ice, and the hit is shoulder-to-shoulder. And does he get him, you know, a little high up, Drew? Sure. But the primary point of contact is the shoulder. That's a clean hit. And sometimes guys get injured. And, you know, I've heard this argument over the years that Scott Stevens was a headhunter. By the way, I shouldn't be the guy maybe talking about Scott Stevens, because as far as I'm concerned, he's the best hitter of all time. And as you know, he's my favorite player of all time. But Scott Stevens was a clean hitter. He was not a dirty hitter. And, you know, he has a Conn Smythe trophy to prove it. And so when you're talking about this hit, I mean, sure, is his head down? Yes. But he's admiring the play, and, you know, he leaves himself vulnerable. And again, Drew, I don't ever want to see anyone injured. So sure, it's horrible that Sebastian Aho in his second season is out with a concussion. We don't know how long he's going to be out, Sean. Maybe he's only going to be out for a game or two. We definitely don't hope that it's anything longer than that.
I think the lower body injury is actually the more is going to be the longer-term injury.
If you watch the knee,
yeah,
it's pretty grisly looking.
So, Sean, let me ask you this. The Carolina Hurricanes are battling for a playoff spot in the Eastern Conference. They're 8th in the Metropolitan Division. The loaded Metropolitan Division, yet they're only 3 points out of the second wild card spot. Is this a deal breaker? Losing Aho for any length of time, and it seemed like it was going to be at least probably a couple of weeks, the best case scenario. Is this the deal breaker? The Carolina Hurricanes won't be able to overcome the loss of Aho in their quest to get back into the playoffs for the first time in about, I don't know, 48 years or however long it's been in Carolina?
Is it a step back and is it a hurdle they're going to have to overcome? Absolutely. Nothing's impossible. Lest we forget the Winnipeg Jets' decor the year they made the playoffs and how decimated it was and the services of Mark Stewart and Adam Pardee and Paul Postma. You know, you can get guys
don't
to
forget about my boy Keaton Ellerbe.
I will never forget about Keaton
Jay Harrison, who they acquired Harrison, that year from the Carolina Hurricanes.
The Pardee dangle. Never forget the Pardee dangle.
Opened the scoring in the playoffs.
To
the
Sean's point, though, I mean, Sebastian Aho is having a terrific season, and the Carolina Hurricanes are not a top offensive team in the league, so this is going to hurt big time. I have no idea, Drew, if they're going to make the playoffs or not. I picked them to make the playoffs, but it's just so tight. Look at those Eastern Conference standings. We just talked to Colton about this. Huh. The Rangers are in it. The Flyers are in it. There's a whole bunch of teams in that metropolitan division that, I mean, they could easily have seven or eight teams making the playoffs. Obviously, there can only be five, Drew, but, I mean, you have other talented players there. Jordan Staal, Jeff Skinner, Teuvo Teravainen. It's a great defense. Noah Hanifin is an all-star this year. So, I mean, the Carolina Hurricanes can still do it without Sebastian Aho, but when you're a team that is kind of goal-hungry, it's going to be a big loss for them. But back to the hit, you know, Sean mentions, you know, the knee there. But again, to me, that was totally accidental. I don't care what you say. He didn't intentionally stick his knee out.
No.
I mean, that's just the position that he was in. He steps up on Aho, makes a play, makes a big hit, and unfortunately, you know, Aho, you know, suffers a lower body injury, a concussion. As you mentioned, Drew, was only part of it. It looks like, you know, it might have been his knee there. But to me, I mean, it's a clean hit. It's pretty straightforward. I mean, body checking, last time I checked, is still part of the game.
And you have to take into account also, Mark Giordano is a guy that has had to work his butt off his whole life to get where he is right now. And I bet you Mark Giordano, when he was growing up through the ranks of hockey as a defenseman, when he was told, you see a forward cutting through the middle of the ice, you take him down. Doesn't have to be dirty, but if you see a guy toe-dragging into the middle of the ice 5 feet from your net, and you are in a position to remove him from the puck.
If he doesn't,
you
lay
do
the
it.
If he doesn't lay that hit, Sean, Aho probably steps around him and scores.
Yeah,
no, yeah.
And people are wondering why didn't you lay that hit?
Exactly.
No, I get why he laid the hit and everything else. Here's what Ray Ferraro had to say. He talked about the hit on TSN 1050. Here's what Ferraro had to say about the hit.
The hit. When I watched that hit, the first thing I noticed was because Giordano is square up like a football linebacker, your legs become really vulnerable. When a guy hits shoulder, like when he's turned, his shoulder makes contact before his own legs get in the way. But because he was squared up, their legs make contact. I didn't think it's a suspension, not even close. It sucks. I mean, Aho looks hurt, and it's brutal.
So there's Ray Ferraro, who certainly knows more about the actual on-ice, you know, interactions than we do, saying that that's a clean hit and just a bad outcome of a clean hit.
Like, if Sebastian Aho stands up, there's no knee contact. He stands up, he shakes it off, goes to the bench, and you see him kind of hunched over, you know, gathering himself after taking a big hit. It's just a big hit. It's just something you'll see on the highlights that evening, and we're not thinking any discipline.
And Sean, you know, for some who don't watch a lot of hockey, you know, because how his head kind of snaps back, it looks like it's a hit to the head. But if you look at it, and I've looked at this again probably 20 times now preparing for tonight's show, it's not a hit to the head.
He doesn't leave his feet.
He gets him with the shoulder. It's a shoulder-to-shoulder hit. And on the follow-through, obviously, you know, it takes him back, and obviously there's that element of that knee, but we just mentioned it. Because of the way that Giordano goes into him, Ray Ferraro just mentioned it, kind of like a linebacker, unfortunately he gets injured on the play, but again, it's not something that you can penalize him by with a suspension.
Moving on to Chicago, where Corey Crawford continues to be out of the Blackhawks lineup, and there were reports yesterday that it was vertigo-like symptoms, which would be the second time in his career he suffered from vertigo. Scotty Bowman tonight coming out and saying that it's not vertigo, rather it's post-concussion syndrome, which certainly isn't a better of the two options. With Corey Crawford,
it's very scary.
Out of the Blackhawks lineup, indefinitely, potentially for the remainder of the season, as Mark Lazarus reported yesterday. Can the Blackhawks overcome that with a goaltending tandem of Anton Forsberg and Jeff Glass? The Blackhawks, given that they play again in the ultra-competitive Central Division, they're seventh in the Central Division, 3 points behind the second wild card spot. So, and Corey Crawford, you know, had certainly been earlier in the year the Blackhawks' best player and certainly a linchpin to their team's success. Is this, you know, going to be too much for the Blackhawks to overcome?
Well, certainly in the playoffs it will be, Drew. And, you know, this is a really unfortunate injury. Guys, we just saw Jeff Glass absolutely stone the Jets and pick up that shutout. But they can't go with Jeff Glass and Anton Forsberg for any extended period of time. And that's, you know, no offense to those two goaltenders, but those guys just aren't number one NHL goaltenders. They're not in the same class as Corey Crawford.
Mm-hmm.
And I heard Dregs talking about it on the afternoon ride. I mean,
Dregs being Darren Dreger?
Yeah. And
you guys are tight, of course.
Right. Well, thanks, Drew. But when you're talking about Corey Crawford, I mean, he's, in my opinion, a top five goaltender in the NHL. I don't think he's the best goaltender because I think that's Carey Price, but he's certainly a top five goaltender in the NHL. Again, that's my opinion. At the very least, I don't think you can argue that he's anything but a top 10 goaltender in the NHL. So when you're talking about that, you're really going to miss him when it comes to the playoffs because the Hawks are a pretty darn good defensive team. But when you're talking about Crawford, I mean, he's a guy that can play 60-plus games. So if he's out for any extended period of time, guys,
yeah,
I think you have to make a move if you're Stan Bowman.
So you think that it's still worth them trying to shore up the goaltending position in an effort just to get into the playoff spot?
I think they can still make the playoffs with the goaltenders they have now. But if and again, you know, Mark Lazarus mentions this in his article,
mm-hmm.
and Crawford's not out for the season.
Officially,
for sure.
Yeah.
He could be out for the season. Big difference. I mean, sure, that means, you know, that there's a good chance he's out for an extended period of time, but let's wait and see what happens here. But if it's 2 months, Drew, or 4 months.
Well, when you're dealing with concussions, that's the problem, is the Blackhawks have no idea how long it's going to be.
But also, the Hawks are a win-now team.
Sure.
So they're not happy just to get into the playoffs. They want to go on a long run. They've won 3 cups in the last 7 years, so I would expect Bowman to be active in the trade market for a goaltender if Crawford is going to be out for whatever, 2 or 3 months.
For what it's worth.
Or longer.
For what it's worth, according to TheAthletic.com and their probability standings, which they update on a daily basis, the Chicago Blackhawks have the lowest percentage chance to make the playoffs in the entire Central Division, only with a 33% chance of making the playoffs with Corey Crawford currently out of their lineup. You know, so we'll see what Stan Bowman decides to do about their goaltending situation. When we come back, James O'Brien of Pro Hockey Talk joins us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
Have you unblocked me on Twitter, by the way?
No, it's been great. I'm really enjoying it. It's probably going to continue for a little while longer.
Just unblock me.
No. You're lucky I haven't blocked you on text messaging. That's the next step. Welcome back to NHL This Week. Drew Mandel, Sean Asor, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to welcome back to the program James O'Brien. You can know James from his work with Pro Hockey Talk. James, good evening, and thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Our pleasure, James. Obviously brought you on to take a look around the NHL. We just spent last segment talking about Corey Crawford and the injury and the announcement just recently that apparently he's suffering from post-concussion syndrome or symptoms, and that's why he's out of the Blackhawks lineup. Can the Blackhawks still make the playoffs without Corey Crawford in their net, or if he's out for a significant period of the rest of the season?
When you consider how tough a spot they're in, even with Crawford in the net, albeit on and off this season, no, I don't think they can. I think, as you were saying in the last segment, they have to at least consider what taking a shot at a high-level backup would cost them. Because that's the thing. I mean, you know, they could get a decent backup, but give up too much in futures, miss the playoffs, and kind of have the worst of all worlds. They're in a real bind right now.
Yeah, I agree, James. And I wanted to ask you about an article that you wrote yesterday for NBC's Pro Hockey Talk. I thought it was really interesting, talking about Jonathan Drouin and Alex Galchenyuk and where they're better suited to play. And, you know, Jonathan Drouin, of course, it looks like he's going to move back to wing. He's been playing center. He's played both at the NHL level. In your opinion, where are these two players better off in terms of giving the Habs their best chance to succeed?
Well, you know, that's the funny thing about this situation is they're basically almost twins in the criticisms they've gotten from, in Drouin's case, in Tampa Bay, where John Cooper once said of his defense that he needs to play as if there's two nets. So, you know, and in both cases, you're talking about guys who do have their warts on defense. And, you know, the more I looked into it, while my preference would be to give Galchenyuk another shot, I think they were a little hard on him when he was having knee problems last season. By putting him on the wing alongside Drouin, also on the wing, if that gets Galchenyuk on the ice more, then it's probably worth all the histrionics with being obsessed with position and being obsessed with all these other. Yeah, it feels like a lot of backtracking to save management's hindquarters, if you will. So I don't hate the idea of putting them together on the wings. I don't know about Jacob De La Rose being the perfect fit, but perhaps when they get a little healthier, it might actually be something where they stumble on something good, although it's quite late for the Canadians to be experimenting at this point.
James, it's been a really fun year to watch with regards to rookies, and you know, whether it's the smooth skating, nifty Matt Barzal, you know, the pure goal scoring Brock Besser, Charlie McAvoy on the ice right now taking on the Habs. I'm just curious, from your perspective, who's been the most impressive thus far as we make our way through the season, in your opinion?
You know, even just a week ago, I picked Besser as my number one pick, but you watch the magic of Barzal, and it's really hard to argue with that. I mean, he's basically playing like a top-line center. Last I checked, he had the same amount of points in the same amount of games as Sidney Crosby. So even at a slightly tough season for Crosby, if you can do that, and it's not just for a week, you should put that at the top of your resume. So I'd probably go Barzal, but, you know, for me, it's not even just the top of the mountain that makes it exciting. It's the volume of quality players. The top pick of this last draft, Nico Hischier, he's not exploding yet, but he's a very important player for the Devils, a lot of fun to watch. You know, there's just a ton of guys that, you know, I remember when the Golden Knights were going to come into the league, I was concerned that it would dilute the talent too much, but there's so much young talent coming into the NHL that, you know, I mean, you watch the Golden Knights, you don't feel like they're lacking in any talent. So it's been a great time the last couple seasons. I think the speed of the game really helps that, and I think coaches partially by choice, partially by salary cap limitations, are putting these guys in better positions to succeed.
James O'Brien is our guest on NHL This Week. James works for Pro Hockey Talk. You can also follow him on Twitter at Cycle Like Sedin's. James, you know, Jack Johnson came out earlier this week with a trade request out of the Columbus Blue Jackets organization. It's sort of a bizarre situation there in that Johnson is a UFA at season's end. He's been a member of the Blue Jackets for a number of years now. He has his own personal financial troubles as a result of, well, his scam artist parents. You know, it's really it's a bizarre situation in that there's not a guy who really wants to leave Columbus, but he's looking for an opportunity to play as much as possible in order to get a payday in free agency that will help him with those aforementioned financial troubles. Sort of a unique situation. How do you think that's going to play out as we approach the trade deadline?
He's in a really tough spot because this is the one season where his ice time's been going down. He might have, I don't know, there were some discussions that there were at least some extension talks, and you wonder if he maybe should have just jumped on any offer he could have gotten. But the thing is, the Blue Jackets, the kind of things that they're going to want to add, I think would be very difficult unless Johnson was part of a package. Because, you know, in a situation like this, normally maybe a contender might want to give you kind of very little for Johnson. He's a very flawed player. You know, you talk about how people would sometimes slam Erik Karlsson back in the days, you know, just being all offense. Well, a lot of times that's at least partially fiction. It's usually guys like Jack Johnson that are the guys that are a real problem in their own end. I think you could make him work in that he has some transition skill. He can still move. He's a big guy. He can help his team exit the zone. I could imagine a creative coach making that work. But the problem is that the Blue Jackets aren't a rebuilding team. They're a team that wants to contend. So I think really the best case scenario for Johnson would probably, unfortunately, being an injury, opening something up for him.
James, speaking of the Columbus Blue Jackets, the Dallas Stars play the Blue Jackets in Columbus tomorrow night, and of course you used to live in Texas, and I wanted to ask you about the Dallas Stars. They've won a couple of games in a row here. They've won 7 of their last 10. They're actually only 2 points behind the St. Louis Blues with a game in hand, and only 4 points behind the Winnipeg Jets, playing the exact same amount of games, 46. Is this a Stanley Cup contender, in your opinion, and why aren't more people talking about how well the Stars have been playing as of late?
Well, that's a good question. I think they could be, just because, you know, it's almost the NBA Jam principle. If you put the two best players on the ice, do your guys stand up? And you look at Sagan, Ben, there aren't many better 1-2 punches than those two. So if you can get the rest of the team on board, maybe get a good trade deadline draw, all of a sudden, you know, you have the pieces to trade blows with just about any team. I think I'm not the only person to say this, but a lot of us have mixed feelings just because this team was once the most exciting team in the NHL, or at least one of them, especially a couple years ago where they were able to outscore their problems. But, you know, they had a disappointment last season, and they brought in Ken Hitchcock, and it's a dramatic difference. You know, Sagan and Ben are still fun to watch, but this team doesn't play with much of a pace. On the other hand, I think that was actually the right thing to do, because they were already adding some slow-footed defensemen. They added a big goalie who's not exactly, you know, the greatest save maker. When you look at Ben Bishop, his best times are when he's able to get into position and use his gigantic frame to make stops. I think that they're, you know, you can look at it from their 7 of 10. I think they're just hitting their stride now. And, you know, I think part of it's, you know, playing in Texas, having to compete with a lot of other sports for attention, and maybe not having the most exciting style anymore. And they're not lighting teams up, but they're gradually getting better, and they can definitely be dangerous.
Now, James, going back
to division,
go ahead.
It feels like the Central Division is just loaded with interesting wild cards, I would say.
Just going to say, James, going back to your NBA Jam reference, if we're going to play NBA Jam, I have to be the Bulls. I realize that you can't be Michael Jordan, but I'll take Scottie Pippen and Horace Grant any day of the week, and I'll light it up.
How did you remember that? That it was Scottie Pippen and Horace Grant? It's you follow basketball.
You couldn't be Michael Jordan. Yeah. So
I know, but I mean, how do you remember that?
I don't know.
Okay. Sorry, James. A bit of an aside there. Go ahead.
That was back in the day where all those basketball players wouldn't be – they had their own games. Like Charles Barkley had like his – oh, no, I think Shaq had the kung fu game.
Shaq Fu.
Yeah. Charles Barkley had the game where you throw one of your opponents through a plate glass window.
I mean, we could name off all the questionable things Charles Barkley would do. It'd actually make probably a full video game. Grand Theft Auto.
We might be onto something.
James, I'm curious. We were just briefly talking about the Golden Knights, and just watching their game versus Nashville last night, a really exciting low-scoring 1-0 game, and just watching the Golden Knights, and just they're so tenacious and their structure, and you know, there's no real superstar, with all respects to James Neal and Jonathan Marchessault, but is this a team that, you know, that has been playing so tenacious and hard and well-structured that once they get in to the playoffs, which I assume they will, this is a team that has been playing the right way for so long, they actually might be able to do some damage?
Well, especially if they can get significant home ice. Mm-hmm. I mean, their record in Vegas is still 18-2-2. It's unbelievable. I know it's Vegas, but that's still outrageous. So, you know, even if you have everyone quarantined in their hotel rooms, I mean, you know, you could imagine in Nevada in June or May, even April, the ice might not be great. And I guess actually that might not necessarily work to their advantage.
Yeah,
but,
speed.
You know, you see sometimes those Sun Belt teams might know their bad ice more than other teams. So, you know, there's certain factors that it's kind of unbelievable that they might be a buyer at the trade deadline. Like that. I'd know, if you would have had me make a lopsided bet against that, I would have made it. So,
James O'Brien covers the NHL for Pro Hockey Talk. You can follow him on Twitter, at Cycle Like Sedin's. James, always appreciate your time. Thanks for joining us.
Absolutely, anytime.
NBA Jam Tournament next time you're on with us. When we come back,
I get the Suns.
Okay, you can have the Suns. Dan Marley and who?
Charles Barkley.
There you go. Okay.
Barkley was in one NBA Jam, and then he got too cool for NBA Jam.
You know, James, some other good combos. I'm just Googling them here. Carl Malone and Jeff Hornacek on the Utah Jazz.
Yes.
And you're talking about Alonzo Mourning and Larry Johnson for the Hornets.
Grandmama.
Underrated.
Yeah.
I missed those Hornets teams.
That was I forget about Alonzo Mourning on the Hornets. Anyways, we've really taken a tangent to the nth degree. James, thanks for doing this, buddy.
Absolutely, anytime.
All righty. When we come back with the latest TSN insider trading, we got that for you. Much more. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to NHL This Week. This segment of the show brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. Remember, if you're looking for a place to watch the game, perhaps you're looking for a place to watch Saturday afternoon's game, well, maybe having a late lunch. Bernstein's Deli's got the big screen TVs, they have the full audio, they got great food and drink specials. It's hashtag Hockey Night at Bernstein's. Check them out, Bernstein's Deli in the Cordon Village Mall.
And the Poutine Cup is coming up.
The Poutine Cup.
And I'm going to be trying the Bernstein's Poutine. And we're going to have a clip either this Saturday or the following Saturday of me trying the Bernstein's Poutine. And hopefully I chew and I don't just swallow like a duck.
Yes, because nothing works as well on radio as listening to somebody eat. The latest edition of TSN Insider Trading happened, I believe, yesterday. Here's what the insiders had to talk about.
A couple of insiders alongside Darren Dreger and Bob McKenzie. The other is down at the Air Canada Center and Pierre Lebrun covering the Leafs and the Blues. Seems like every night or two now we have one of these offside reviews where we all have to look at it about 10 times and still aren't sure. Has this become a familiar nightmare for the National Hockey League?
It really has. 1999, you had the toe in the crease debacle, and obviously that impacted the Stanley Cup final. And really, that's what the National Hockey League is most concerned with. Now it is the toe on the blue line. And you're right, every week there's another example of how something introduced to eliminate egregious missed offsides is now being dissected by millimeters. Some, frankly, want the video process specific to offsides scrapped altogether. That's not going to happen. The league isn't going backwards. Others want a clearer definition or an expansion of the definition of the rule. And one idea suggests that you use the TV feed only for the review. You get rid of the blue line camera. So if the feed supplies an inconclusive look, then you live with it, and the call on the ice stands.
I do a naked eye review where the ref gets one look at a replay. If it's not obvious, the rule stands. Let's bring in Pierre Lebrun on this. The part about the skate being on the ice or not, they looked at changing that, but for some reason didn't. Might they still?
there's no question there's a possibility. Colin Campbell telling me last week that he's going to take another run at this when the GMs meet in March. I mean, he was the guy that came out of the meeting last March, as Bob and Darren know, that, and he was disappointed that he couldn't find consensus because he was concerned that the skate in the air over the blue line was going to be an issue moving forward, and has it ever. At least 8 or 9 goals this year call back just on that. And I think Colin Campbell's point on this is that in the spirit of the offside rule, if the body's not across the blue line but simply the skate above the blue line, in the spirit of it, that should be onside. He'll take another run at it in a few months.
Yeah, the spirit has been lost. Let's move on because I hate this topic. Trade talk. Price for Evander Kane getting larger?
Yeah, Pierre LeBrun last week talked about it being 3 pieces, and it'll be a minimum of 3 pieces. I suppose it depends on the pieces that you're talking about. A first-round draft pick, a prospect, and a conditional draft pick. If that team is successful in extending Evander Kane is what we talked about last week. But there are teams out there who now say Jason Botterill, the general manager of the Sabres, would like as many as 4 pieces, and included in what I just mentioned is also an NHL roster player. So you don't get what you ask for unless you ask for it first.
Penguins GM Jim Rutherford, very good executive, 3 Stanley Cup rings, a very nice man, but he's become my nemesis because he ruins Trade Center every year by making an early deal. Might he do it again for the Pens?
He would certainly like to try to do that, and he's been talking a lot to that point. Evander Kane is one of the players that Jim Rutherford has been talking to Jason Botterill, his former employee, about. But a scoring winger like Evander Kane might be a luxury that the Penguins cannot afford, especially at the prices that Darren mentioned. What they're looking more for is forward depth at the center position, third or fourth line. One of many candidates that would be potentially out there would be a guy who's going to be an unrestricted free agent like Mark Letestu of the Edmonton Oilers. In terms of what Pittsburgh might give up to try and get a center of some nature, that could be defenseman Ian Cole, who's fallen out of favor with head coach Mike Sullivan.
One guarantee every year, Pierre, is that everybody wants defensemen at the deadline. And this year, there may be some prominent names available.
Yeah, I think so, James. Let's start with Mike Green, who right now isn't on the market because the Detroit Red Wings have not given up on their season just yet. But at some point in time, the math will catch up. They'll have to go through Green's people at Newport Sports. He's got a full no-trade clause now for a right-handed power play guy. A lot of teams are going to line up. He's got a $6 million cap hit. The Wings will eat a bunch of that to make a trade happen. One team I think you got to keep an eye on is Tampa Bay, who I think would like an upgrade in their top four, although, again, they haven't talked to anyone. Jack Johnson, we know he's asked for a trade. Several teams, I'm told, have reached out to Columbus since he did ask for that trade over the weekend. Tough part for Columbus, they want a forward back. They don't want to make a rental deal where they get draft picks in return, so that'll be a tough thing to do for Jarmo Kekalin. And finally, Paul Martin, who cleared waivers on Tuesday, and that's a good thing. He wants to play games in the AHL to show other NHL teams what he's got to create a better market for himself. A couple of contenders have called, but they want to see him play.
Paul and everybody else, take your time because we need it for Trade Center. This has been Insider Trading.
That's James Duthie, Bob McKenzie, Pierre LeBrun, and Darren Dreger, the TSN Hockey Insiders.
The former Prime Minister of Canada is available.
Yes, Paul Martin.
Yes.
Yeah, they're both, in fact, available.
Was he your favorite finance minister of all time?
You were really just going way off the board.
He's on fire.
Today on the show, eh? Boom shakalaka, to keep with our NBA Jam references. The price for Evander Kane, apparently no longer 3 pieces. Somehow it's gotten more expensive. It's now 4 pieces. A first-round pick, a prospect, a conditional draft pick if the team is successful in giving him a contract extension, and a roster player.
I actually heard that leading up to the trade deadline, it's actually going to be a roster player, a prospect, a first-round pick, $15 million, and a condo in Vegas.
And Jimmy Carson and Mike Kruszelniski and whoever else the Oilers got in the Gretzky trade?
Yep.
Who's giving a first-round pick for Evander Kane?
Well,
never mind. Let's start with, never mind, 4 pieces. How many teams around the league are so desperate for Evander Kane that they're willing to give up a first-round pick plus, 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 plus?
Yeah, that's a good question. And as far as I'm concerned, the biggest question mark is, are you going to sign him after you trade for him, or is he just a rental? And if he is a rental, I don't think you can give that much up for Evander Kane, because I just don't think he's that good. Yes, he's a bona fide 30-goal scorer. He's having a pretty good year on a terrible team. But if you're not going to sign him to a 5 or 6 year contract, how can you justify giving up a high draft pick, a roster player, a prospect? I think there's going to be a lot of teams after him, and we talked about this on Saturday's show, Drew. I mean, you can make an argument, you know, that a team like the Vegas Golden Knights might go after Evander Kane. He's a fast, skilled player. Vegas is a fast, skilled team. You could make an argument that maybe the Pittsburgh Penguins would go after Evander Kane. San Jose has been struggling to score goals this year. Maybe they go after Evander Kane. I mean, I think you could sit here and name seven or eight teams, Sean, but as far as I'm concerned, that asking price that the insiders talked about is way too high.
I think there's only one team that would make that trade. Buffalo.
Already been there, done that.
Oh, wait, that happened already?
Yeah. Moving to Pittsburgh, where Jim Rutherford, their general manager, usually is active in the trade market. We know the Penguins have been middling for much of the season.
They've
so
won
far.
Four in a row, though.
Right, so they're beginning to get hot when it matters. You know, it doesn't really matter as much in, you know, you can tread water in October, November, and December if you step it up in January and February, and the Penguins appear to be doing that. They are usually active. Do you expect Jim Rutherford and the Penguins to be active in the trade market as well?
Yeah, I do. I don't think that they're going to bring in, you know, a first line guy, but, you know, a guy that makes a lot of sense to me that you've heard his name, you mentioned it earlier, Drew, is a guy like Mark Letestu. And they've already acquired Riley Sheahan from the Detroit Red Wings. He's more of a fourth-line center. He's not that third-line center that they're looking for. I mean, they're looking for their Jordan Staal from back in 2009, right?
They need Nick Bonino back.
Right. So, I mean, I could see, you know, a player like Mark Letestu. I'm not saying that, you know, it's a foregone conclusion that the Penguins get Letestu. I'm saying that type of player makes a lot of sense.
They'll turn
him
into a 30-goal scorer.
Right, and I think, you know, speaking of, you know, trades, I think they could still possibly be after another defenseman. And, you know, the insiders talked about it. Ian Cole's a guy, you know, that's been on the trade market, and, you know, there's been some connection to maybe Ian Cole from Mark Letestu. But the point is, I think the Penguins will be active acquiring not only a forward, but maybe a defenseman as well.
Sean, quickly,
maybe a goalie, you know, as a backup, too, with, you know, Matt Murray has not been great this year.
Matt Murray actually left the team on the road trip. His father passed away.
Yep.
Our condolences to Matt Murray and his family that he's gone back to Ontario to be with his family. So it's going to be Tristan Jarry in that for the Penguins, I think, for the foreseeable future. Quickly, Sean, on the offside rule with the skate above the ice, and we're not sure, should it count, should it not count? Is this the most ridiculous NHL thing? I mean, it's such an easy solution, yet the NHL refuses to. I mean, Colin Campbell tried last March. They're going to try again this March to get it right for a league desperate to increase scoring. To ever take away goals for minor infractions like this seems counterproductive.
Yeah, it's these ongoing delayed challenges and whether or not a goal should count if you've had possession for over, let's say, 20 seconds after the offside. So there's all these little intricacies that they're just trying to figure out with regards to offside, but it just kind of seems like you're poking at nothing right now.
You know, Sean, I'm slowly, you know, going towards the camp that says take away, you know, all offside video reviews and challenges, because I think it's got so ridiculous. I mean, if it's offside, to me, it's fairly black and white. And if the player's foot is in the air and it's not on the line, but it's kind of equal with the line, that's offside, right? So I think I'm just getting pretty sick and tired of talking about it.
They, you know, there was one egregious offside that was missed, and as a result now, every goal is questioned. I mean, it'd be like, you know, if the NFL missed one egregious pass interference call, and now every touchdown had to be, you know, every pass had to be reviewed ad nauseum. You've killed it. You know, demote the linesman who blew that call, and we would have been fine at this point in time. Instead, we're into an absolute schmoz of a situation. When we come back, Anthony Sanfilippo joins us. He's a good friend of the show. He covers the Philadelphia Flyers. Talk about the Flyers. Talk about Eric Lindros's jersey retirement tomorrow in the city of brotherly love. Anthony joins us next. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. 25 minutes before the top of the hour. Welcome back to NHL This Week. Drew Mandel, Sean Assor, Ezra Ginsberg with you. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website with the latest Jets and Moose news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Of all the guests we have on this program, Anthony Sanfilippo is one of them.
Happy New Year, Anthony.
Happy New Year, boys.
No, I would.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us, Anthony. The only reason I make that crack at your expense is turnabout being fair play, given the crack you made at us on Twitter earlier today. But it's all said with love from us back to you in the city of brotherly love. Anthony Sanfilippo covers the Flyers for CrossingBroad.com. How are things, Anthony?
Oh, everything's fantastic in the hockey world. Nobody's paying attention because the football team's in the NFC Championship game, so it's okay when the team loses 5-1 to the Rangers, and it's like, you know, a tree falling in the woods and it doesn't make a sound.
Well, you know, Winnipeg is Vikings country, and so, you know, we'll try and keep things peaceful when it comes to the Eagles Vikings matchup on Sunday, and I won't say anything that you say personally as an Eagles fan, and I'll keep my Vikings fandom, you know, private in the course of this interview so we can get through it peacefully.
Well, I'll say this, I'm not an Eagles fan, so you're okay with that. You're okay, by me.
Well, in that case, you want to become a Vikings fan?
For this game, sure.
Oh, there you go. Now we're back on good terms. Anthony, like we said, you mentioned the Flyers and their loss, you know, 5-1 to the Rangers earlier in the week, last night to be precise, and they're out of a playoff spot in the ultra-competitive Metropolitan Division, but they are within striking distance and they have games in hand. You know, is there any reason to believe, though, that this Flyers team can get things going to become a playoff team, or are they just really sort of a average, middling team in a very competitive division?
Yeah, I think it's more the latter than the former. I mean, sure, anything can happen. The team can get hot. They won 10 in a row last year, if you recall. Still missed the playoffs, but they did win 10 straight games. If they went on a 10-game winning streak, I think that they would, you know, obviously be in a playoff spot at that point, and then it would be a matter of holding on. But they are a very streaky team. They lost 10 in a row. Then they went 12-4-1 over the next 17 games, which included winning streaks of 6-4. So I mean, they come and go, the Flyers, but you can't have games like last night and 2 weeks ago against Pittsburgh. At home, no less, where those are games against teams that you are chasing for a wild card spot, and you come out and lay an egg. And that's what the Flyers did. I mean, they played well for maybe the first 10 minutes of the game last night, and then it was all Rangers. And the Pittsburgh game, it was very similar. They played well at the very beginning of the game. Pittsburgh scored a few goals, and then that was it. The Flyers couldn't come back. And it's really perplexing. Like, it's hard to say what kind of team this is, because there are games where you look at them and say, wow, they're playing really well. They're scoring a lot. You know, Giroux's having a great season, and Couturier's having a great season, and Voracek's having a great season. Wow, this team's looking really good. And then they come out and do what they did last night, and you're like, oh, geez, this team really isn't that good. So it's more than likely that instead of looking at little snippets and little stretches where they play well or play poorly, that you take the season as a whole, and as a whole, they're just a mediocre hockey team who's going to linger just outside of the final playoff spot, and I wouldn't be surprised if that's where they're at come April.
You know, Anthony, you just mentioned Giroux, Couturier, and Voracek, and, you know, Couturier didn't score last night, but previous to that, he had 7 goals in his last 4 games. He's up to 25 goals on the year, so obviously the Shifley-Couturier debate is going to continue. Unfortunately for Shifley right now, he's injured, but nonetheless, Couturier's having a career year. But when you talk about the big three, Couturier, Giroux, and Voracek, does their fate really depend on other players stepping up and providing some more secondary offense?
Yeah, I mean, it really does. I mean, you know, in the Rangers game last night was the first time that they put those three back together as a line, and Coach Dave Haxtell did that in the third period, and the game was already lost at that point. But one of the things that they did, one of the changes they made after the 10-game losing streak was splitting them up to try and spread offense around, and they were starting to get some secondary scoring, but they're not getting enough. I mean, there's a couple of young kids who they were kind of hoping would provide some scoring. Travis Konechny has started to play a little bit better, but still not putting the puck in the net. Jordan Wheel got hot here recently, scored the 1 goal last night against the Rangers. I think he's got 4 in his last 6 games or something like that. So he's starting to a little bit, but not quite to the level they were hoping. And of course, then Nolan Patrick has not been a goal scorer yet, although he has been playing better all-around hockey. And I was kind of I think that they kind of expected those young guys to kind of come in and provide that secondary scoring, and they haven't. And then when you look at the veterans in the lineup, Wayne Simmons is having a down year, even though he's got 14 goals or whatever he's got. Most of them are coming on the power play. And then beyond that, every other veteran on the team is a bit of a disaster. Val Filppula is not scoring. Yuri Laterra still doesn't have a goal this season. So there's some real depth weakness to the forward unit, and that's the biggest problem the Flyers have. Everybody thought the problem was going to be defense, and they've actually been decent defensively. Not great, but not bad. Their two problems have been secondary scoring on offense and no penalty kill. Their penalty kill has been a disaster. It's ranked 29th in the league, and it's getting worse.
Anthony, it should make for an entertaining evening tomorrow when the Maple Leafs visit the Flyers, as a pretty recognizable number in 88 gets raised to the rafters tomorrow for Flyer fans.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. I mean, you know, I grew up here, and you know, the Eric Lindros era was really my era growing up here. I got a chance to cover him very little. I started covering the team in his last year with the Flyers. And that year he didn't play. So he was kind of around. I got to do a couple of interviews, gotten to talk to him several times since then, when he was in New York and then when he was in Toronto. And of course, when he got, into the hall, and now that they're finally going to put all the past aside, let bygones be bygones and raise that number to the rafters where it belongs, in all honesty. I mean, the Lindros era, while it did not bring a Stanley Cup championship to Philadelphia, it was one of the most dominant offensive lines in hockey in my lifetime, for sure. And certainly in an era when goal scoring was down, they were still putting up 95 to 97, 100 points. Lindros had 115 one year. To put up those kind of numbers in an era where there was, you know, clutching and grabbing and neutral zone traps and everything else, really says a lot about what Lindros, LeClaire, and Michael Renberg did as a line. So, deservedly so, Eric's number going up to the rafters.
Anthony Sanfilippo is our guest on NHL This Week. He covers the Philadelphia Flyers for CrossingBroad.com. Anthony, I'm paraphrasing, but you've been of the opinion, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, that Dave Hakstol, you think that his job should or could be in jeopardy given what he's the performance he's had as the Flyers head coach. You know, if there was a different head coach behind the bench in Philadelphia, do you think that individual, this hypothetical individual, could extract more from the Flyers lineup, and Dave Hakstol just isn't getting enough out of the roster?
Yeah, I think it's a very fair question that you ask, because, you know, it's easy to just say, oh, bring somebody else in, and then all of a sudden these guys will be better, and that's not necessarily the case. A lot of this falls more on the general manager, Ron Hextall, for having this roster be what it is at this point. But when you see the same mistakes happening over and over and over again, and you see, you know, young players who you're trying to develop get less time or no time. For example, Travis Sanheim, who was a first-round pick in 2014 and is considered one of their top defensive prospects, is sitting in the press box every night, while Brandon Manning, who is really a seventh defenseman, if you want a real description of what he is playing every game in front of Sanheim and makes mistakes like last night where his pairing was on the ice for three breakaways, two of them which ended up being goals. And you have to wonder why the coach gets away with this and doesn't make the changes necessary. So the problem is there's no identity with the Flyers. Are they a competitor? Are they a gritty competing team? Or are they a rebuilding young team who's, you know, just getting their feet wet? And I don't think Hakstol allows them to be either. And he's kind of got them in this middle ground where they're not physical, they're not tough to play against, they don't skate as much as we thought they were going to skate, they make silly mistakes, the system is not good, special teams are, you know, power play's mediocre and the penalty kill's terrible. Somebody's got to fall for that. Now, to me, it should be the coach. He's had three. You know, he's going to have three seasons. Ron Hextall's not going to fire him before the end of the year, so he will have three seasons behind the bench by the end of this season. And hockey coaches don't normally last that long. You know, he will have had one playoff appearance where they got beat in the first round, and then back-to-back non-playoff years, first time in 25 years the Flyers will miss playoffs 2 years in a row, assuming they don't make it this year. If that's the case, how can you keep him? How can you bring him back? I mean, there's been no progression for your young players and for your team under his stewardship. So that's why I keep saying that. It's not that he's a terrible coach or, oh, he doesn't know the sport. I think it's more along the lines of he doesn't know what buttons to push. And maybe having not been in the NHL prior to this head coaching job, not really knowing what buttons to push at this point. A lot of times in sports, a coach's first go-round is not a good one. And then the second time they end up somewhere, you know, they end up being a really good coach or manager. You can look in other sports. You look at Bill Belichick with the Patriots and Terry Francona when he was with Boston. You know, their first jobs, they were terrible. And then they went somewhere else and they became really good coaches. I think that Haxtell has the ability to be that, but it just isn't working right now in Philadelphia.
Anthony, earlier in the interview, you mentioned Nolan Patrick, and a lot of people here in Winnipeg are curious about Nolan Patrick, and you mentioned that he's struggling offensively, and I remember last time we had you on the show, that was back in mid-November, the day before the Jets and Flyers played, and of course, Patrick made his return to the lineup back then, so that's approximately 2 months ago. So why do you think he's struggling so much? Is it just a young player trying to find his game in the NHL, or is he maybe still having some effects from that injury that he suffered earlier in the year?
That's a good question. I mean, the effects from earlier in the year, I don't think it's that. I mean, he had a very mild concussion. It wasn't a Sidney Crosby type concussion that would knock you out for a long time. They kept him out of the lineup for a while, but it wasn't because of the concussion. It was kind of a convenience that the injury occurred, and that was an opportunity for them to kind of just work him and try and get him in game shape at that point. So that's why he missed as much as he did. I think if there's anything injury related, it's related to the surgery he had last year. A lot of times that hip surgery kind of takes a little bit longer for a hockey player to come back from. They can play, but they're not up to snuff until the following year. I use other guys on his team as an example. You look at Giroux last year and Shane Gostisbehere last year. Both had down years after previous seasons, and they both had that same surgery. And then they came back this year, and they're both having really good years. So it really takes a little bit of time to come back from it. I think if it's something physical, it's that. But from what I'm being told by people in the organization, Nolan Patrick was one of those kids who was so dominant in junior that he didn't have to play at a top speed because he was such a good player. He was able to just kind of make things happen without playing at that speed. And then, so going from junior directly to the NHL without having that stopover in the American Hockey League, it's night and day. Like, you cannot play that way. And it's kind of taken him a while to realize that, geez, he's got to skate. He's got to work harder to create space and opportunity. And he's starting to do it a little bit. We're seeing it playing with Wayne Simmonds and playing with Jordan Wheel. He's had some luck there. But it hasn't quite been what the Flyers thought it was going to be to this point. I'm not saying that they're going to give up on him or that he's going to be a bust. I just think that he's maybe not the kind of player that just comes into the league at 18 and is ready to go. I think he just needs a little bit more seasoning. By the time he's 21, I don't think we're going to be worried about this kind of play from Nolan Patrick.
Anthony, one more for you. Just with the, I want to focus on the blue line and with names like Ivan Provorov, Shane Gostisbehere, like you mentioned, is the value of a guy like Robert Haig kind of go under the radar? Just a real steady guy who can be trusted by the coaches, but doesn't get the exposure maybe of some of the other big names on the blue line?
Yeah, he really does. And one of the things I'll tell you about Haig is that, you know, he's going to be a second pair defenseman in this league for a long time. He's not going to put up a lot of points. He's not really an offensive guy, but he's always going to be, you know, steady, stay at home. He hits. If you watch him play, he's a physical player, which is nice. Really does a nice job separating the opposition from the puck. He's good in front of the net. He blocks shots. He's very even keel. He doesn't let anything bother him. And he's still only 22 years old. So there's a lot to like about Robert Haig. I think that's something, you know, he's not going to be anything. He's not going to be an all-star or anything along those lines. But he's a guy that every team needs, you know, the kind of defenseman that every team needs to have on that second unit. that's playing 20 minutes a night and you can rely on to go against the second best line of the other team without much to worry about.
Anthony Sanfilippo is a good friend of the program. He covers the Flyers for CrossingBroad.com. Anthony, always like to hear from you, buddy. Can you say it just so Vikings fans in Winnipeg can hear you say it? A guy in Philadelphia, can you say Skol Vikings?
Skol
Vikings.
Skol Vikings.
There you go. Thank you, Anthony. Appreciate it, buddy.
Thanks, Anthony.
All right, guys. Talk.
When we come back, one final segment on this Wednesday evening. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. One final segment this Wednesday evening. It's brought to you by Keener Jerseys, specializing in customization services and branded team apparel. Keener Jerseys is changing the game with world-class craftsmanship and unparalleled service. If you want awesome jerseys for your rec team or have a jersey you want customized, visit KeenerJerseys.com or check out their showroom at 982 Portage Avenue. That's the corner of Portage and Sherbourne. Tell them that Illegal Curve sent you. Quick programming notes, Saturday's Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts at 8 a.m. rather than the usual 9 a.m. as the Jets and the Flames both return from their bye week with a matinee in Calgary. A 2 o'clock puck drop means an 8 a.m. start on Saturday morning for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290.
I'll have to make sure that I drink less on Friday night, Drew. I was planning to get pretty lit up, but I'll make sure that I only have maybe 5 or 6 beers as opposed to 13 or 14.
That's good responsibility on your part there, Ezzy. I mean, you're just not that guy anymore, though. Nobody buys it. You're a family man. You're married.
Oh, I can still put him back.
We know you can put him back, but, you know, you just do it at home by yourself as opposed to going out and falling into a snowbank. Instead, you just pass out on the couch. I mean, you're a family man. You're married. You have a child on the way.
I watched The Bachelor last night.
You're a much more responsible member of society.
That's true, by the way.
I don't doubt it for a second.
And Naomi mocked me the entire time.
She didn't watch it with you?
I don't like Ari as much as Nick, by the way.
She didn't watch it with you?
No, she hates it.
Wow, that changes the everything about that. I mean, you watch that by yourself, eh?
I also binge-watched Manhunt Unabomber.
I've heard that's really good.
Really good. Mm-hmm. You should check it out, Drew.
Well, at least Manhunt Unabomber sounds a little bit more interesting. It's presumably about the manhunt for the Unabomber.
Yeah, Ted Kaczynski.
Yeah, I know who the Unabomber was. Yeah. Thank you. I'm aware. But, I mean, that's more reasonable to watch. The Bachelor, less reasonable, although our buddy Josh Cooper, who will probably join us next Wednesday on the show, will be very happy to hear. I mean, you know that Ari, Lewandake, something like that? He was a race car driver. Formula One or Indy or something like that. I don't know.
The episode I watched was just him making out with like 12 different women. That's all that happened.
Isn't that the show? Like, isn't that what it is?
Yeah, pretty much.
At the end of the show,
someone
he marries
gets a flower?
One of them?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. It's...
Nick cried a lot more, I'll tell you that much.
Really?
Classic Nick.
Yeah, he cried a lot.
Nick move.
Yeah, so Nick.
I know. Do you see what's happening in Charlotte, North Carolina tonight? There's a snowstorm affecting a lot of the southern U.S., southeastern U.S. My in-laws in Kentucky are also getting a ton of snow. And Charlotte is playing at home tonight to the Bridgeport Sound Tigers. And because there's a snowstorm going on, and because Bridgeport doesn't visit Charlotte again this year, it'd be very difficult to postpone the game. So they're playing an empty arena game in Charlotte, North Carolina. There are no fans. Fans were not allowed to attend the game, so the Bridgeport Sound Tigers and the Charlotte Checkers are playing a legitimate, you know, real in the standings AHL game with absolutely nobody there. Sort of an interesting atmosphere, if you will.
Is the band Good Charlotte from Charlotte?
What is wrong with you? Like, normally on the Wednesday show, you've had a long day.
How much time do you have, Drew?
What's wrong with you? You're right. It's a lengthy question. But normally on the Wednesday show, you've worked all day. You're a little bit more subdued. You're not as...
Oh, no. I'm fired up. Anytime I get to talk hockey with Shawnee Azor, I'm ready to go. Well, I can talk for another 2 hours.
It's true. Wednesday. I mean, it literally is every Wednesday. And you're not usually as off the wall, let's suggest, as you were with that Good Charlotte comment.
I support it.
It's the grapefruit I've been eating. I eat grapefruit now.
See, this is why you're a responsible member of society.
With sugar?
You eat grapefruit. Do you eat it with sugar?
Yes.
How much sugar is on that grapefruit?
I put a little sugar on it.
Yeah, you pour more than a little sugar on it there, Big Daddy. That's it for this Wednesday edition of NHL This Week. A big thank you to all of our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, and Keener Jerseys. Support these fine local businesses because they support Illegal Curve Hockey. In case you missed any of the show, it's available for download wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe, get it sent to your device each and every week. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website with the latest Jets and Moose news is IllegalCurve.com. For producer Chris doing a great job behind the board, for Sean Asor, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Until Saturday at 8 a.m., we wish you good night and good luck.